So Tim and I are just figuring out our hand signals that we've been using for 10 years.
Yeah, I know.
Thank you. You are listening to The Drew Marshall Show. We are streaming live at drewmarshall.ca. And, of course, we're on the MyJoy radio app and iTunes or Google Play and across the GTA on AM 1250, this radio station, Joy Radio. And we are live streaming on Facebook. So I'm just going to give a little wave to our Facebook humans. Humans. Jason Carter does not play the fiddle. But boy, that sounded good. Jason Carter's musical depth and extraordinary style have left an indelible impact around the world, and he's here to impact us. We're going to talk about Grain of Sand and Jason Carter. Jason, when was the last time you were in Toronto? How long ago?
I think it was 8 years ago.
8 years ago.
Mm. Oh, yes.
Yes, quite right.
Quite right, yes.
Yes. Why were you here 8 years ago, doing the same kind of stuff, same kind of thing?
Not exactly. I used to tour all the time as a musician, so I've come to Canada once a year to do tours, and I started in Toronto and went over to Calgary and then over to BC. And so, but my touring life kind of wound its way down, and I sort of morphed into a filmmaker, and it's a very natural progression for me. So I still play, but film's taken over, and it's very exciting, and it's like a kid playing with new toys.
You seem like... Hold on. I have so many things to say. Let me just get one thing out of the way. Mm. Amy, can you take the pass and go get John? He's at the door, apparently, okay? And we want John to come right into this this area here. Okay, Jason, you did something last night with Imago, and John Franklin is here with Imago Arts. And what was last night? Was it about screening?
Yeah.
Okay, so let's get right into Grains of Sand. Mm. I watched the trailer, the teaser. Mm. I was teased.
Mm-hmm. Good.
I wish I was there last night, but I had other arrangements.
Yeah.
What did I miss?
Grain of Sand. Well, it's kind of, if you've never been to the Gulf before, the Arabian Gulf, so talking about Dubai, Abu Dhabi, these are the kind of flagship cities of the region, then it'll be interesting to you. And even if you have been, I can 99% say for sure that you haven't experienced the culture and heritage of the region, because it's not, it's sort of almost non-existent now. So I've been going to the region for 25 years. I lived there between 93 and 97, and I saw the rapid decline of the music, of many things related to culture and art. And so eventually I was kind of, I had to make this film for myself, actually. I mean, every creative project we do, it's always as a personal connection. So I think first it was personal, but then, of course, it has to have a universal story. Otherwise, it's just a personal film, which people won't like. So there has to be, in every creative process, there's a universal story. And the universal story is identity, because identity is a word that we all have. We meet at some point in our lives, whether it's, you know, cultural, mental, spiritual. And the identity of the region in the Gulf has been challenged because of the development. And so for me, it's a kind of a question, a gentle film, a gentle question about, well, is this important or not? And I've shown the film to Bahrainis, because it's made in Bahrain, mostly. And it's been very powerful, the impact it's had in Bahrainis. And so to bring it to Canada, which is on the other side of the world, has been a fascinating process, to see a bunch of Westerners watching who have nothing to do with the region, nothing to do with, you know, the story.
Okay, so Westerners, let me speak on behalf of all Westerners.
Go for it.
We don't give a holy grunt about what's going on over there. All we have in our head, all we have in our head is, hold on, I said Westerners, and I was speaking on behalf of ignorant Westerners, not liberal tree huggers like you.
All right, okay. I just want to clarify that.
So, you know, as far as we're concerned, over there, where there's desert and sand and flowing clothing and camels and, right, all the kind of stereotypical things.
Oil.
All we have, oil.
Yeah.
All we have in our minds is, ooh, yeah, we should be afraid of them a little bit. And you know what? Yeah, there may be... They're infiltrating over here. You know, there's a judgmental thing happening right now. So why should I give a holy grunt about them over there?
You don't have to. I mean, it's
dude.
You don't. I mean, why do you have to? It's not about that's not the question. The question is, well, if the story is universal, then there has to be some kind of relationship to our lives anyway. So, yeah, we watch TV, we see the violence. The posters of the region are violence, kids dying in Yemen, Syria and Iraq.
Yeah.
That's the main thing. And then we see Dubai, the shopping, the beaches, and it doesn't make sense to us. It doesn't make sense to us living there. I live in Bahrain. It makes no sense at all, because we're literally next door to Yemen, Syria and Iraq, where this stuff is happening every day. and yet we go shopping malls, and it's like being in Canada, you know, it's like being in the States.
Right.
It's, I mean, as a Brit, it's like being in America. It's nothing like Britain. It's like more like the US. And so it's a very confusing, and you have to stop thinking about it sometimes and just get on with your life because it's just a bit crazy. So your question is, why should it matter? It doesn't really matter.
Hold on. You are trying to get us to – you're trying to make – no, how am I trying to say this? Are you not trying to make it matter?
The film has there's two target audiences for the film. The main target audience was for the people in Bahrain in the Gulf because it's about them. So it's like putting a mirror to them and saying, you know, look what's happened here. Is it important? And the response has been amazing. So the second step is, well, what is the impact, or is there any impact on an audience further afield? And that's the question. I don't know. So I've come all the way over here to see. And if there is, awesome. If there isn't, so that's fine. You know, it's the creative process.
Yeah.
I can't determine what impact my music or my films are going to have on people. And sometimes it'll fall flat, and sometimes it's like, oh my gosh, this is so profound. So it's more of a question. I come over here and I show the film and think, well, what do these people think of it? Is it interesting?
Jason Carter is in the studio with us. He is a musician. He is a filmmaker. And a guy named... John Franklin, and we're going to... Oh, good, you hooked him up with the mic. John has used the term raconteur. And since most of us don't know what that actually means, I think we all think it means you're a con artist. What do you think? Did that work? John, is he a con artist? I mean, no, not at all. Okay.
Not at all.
All right. What is a raconteur?
Well,
us regular folk.
I guess it's someone who can take people on a journey through stories. So, and I think my life has been... a myriad of crazy stories from places like North Korea, Afghanistan, and places that people don't really visit very often. So when I count stories from those places, it is kind of interesting. And so to answer your first question about North Korea, well, I've told those stories in Canada and the US before, and I think it really throws a real interesting slant on people's view of those places, because no one's been to North Korea.
Yeah.
Hardly. So you very rarely meet people who've been to Pyongyang or North Korea. So I've learned to try and tell stories to show my experiences or to tell my experiences of those places. And it has worked out quite well, you know.
You can make money telling stories?
Well, I make money playing the guitar, and those stories are part of it.
Okay, all right. That works. Mm. How did you first meet John Franklin?
I met John Franklin at a Christian arts event in Canada. In Holland.
Are you a Christian?
I am, yeah.
So tell me what you mean by Christian.
Well, Christians are people who believe in the death and resurrection of Jesus Christ. That's about it, really, isn't it?
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I learned to ask that question or answer that question, both of them, in a very different way when I challenged Bruce Coburn one day.
Mm-hmm.
And he basically said what many people are saying is, tell me what you mean by Christian, and I'll tell you if I am one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that kind of a answer, that cheeky answer. So how does the Jesus journey impact this storytelling and this – because let me just say this for a second. First of all, I like the fact that you seem to be a little underground.
Okay.
In a cool way. That makes any sense. In other words,
people are cool, aren't they? Most of them are quite cool.
No. But, you know, I'm glad I haven't heard of you in the whole stereotypical, you know, CCM.
Oh, thank God.
Wow, you guys both grunted on that one. That was pretty funny.
Yeah.
This is what I'm saying. The grunt makes all the sense.
Yeah.
Do you have a family?
I do now, yeah.
What do you mean now?
Well, I just got married in the summer.
You did not?
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Yeah, baby.
Well done.
Yeah.
Is there a story behind that love?
There's another story. I mean, there's like so many stories here. There is, yeah. Of course there's a story, yeah.
I love love stories. Go.
In Grain of Sand, I was working on the film, and Lydia, she has done a PhD on these particular very obscure songs of these pearl divers, and so she was my sort of contact person in Bahrain, and so I went to Bahrain, and she was the one that kind of initiated all the connections with the pearl divers in the way.
So hold on. Mm. The woman you married is a pearl diver contact?
Yeah. Yeah.
There's a song title.
Jeez. What app did you use to find her? Holy cow. Where is she right now?
In Bahrain.
Right. You have a guitar beside you.
It's not my guitar. It's a guitar.
Is it tuned?
It should be.
Well, let's give it a go. Let's pick it up and see what it sounds like here on the Drew Marshall Show, because the headstock on that thing would suggest there might be some classical things happening. This is a bit of a creative show for us. On the show right now, Jason Carter tuning his guitar. We just got off the line with Mitch Albom, best-selling author of The Five People You Meet in Heaven. He just released a new book, The Next Person You Meet in Heaven. A little earlier in the show, we had Andrea Ramelow, who blew us away performing on the show. John Franklin, executive director of Imago Arts, who's going to talk sometime.
Can I make a comment?
Well, I keep throwing to you, but no one's saying anything.
Well, I'm sorry. But
first time here, by the
way? No, it isn't. No, I was here before. You were good enough to invite me on another occasion.
Why the heck would I have invited you another time?
Well, that's what I was wondering. But now I'm honored to be invited back. I want to say something about the Holy Grunt. And about
is that the fourth member?
And about
the Father, the Son, and the Holy Grunt.
That you
I didn't know the Holy Spirit was short.
You weren't going to give one of those for these people.
Yes.
Jason's film is not a film to promote Bahrainian people. It's a film to capture something about humanity and culture, and I think it does it beautifully.
Leave it to a professor of philosophy to.
I'm sorry.
To create the hook.
But I think that's right? Really what it's about. And I wanted to say that before he plays in the extraordinary way that he does.
John, when you were walking, or shall I say wandering the halls of Tyndale.
Yes.
It used to be called OBC.
I remember that.
I watched you walk around those halls and you had this saunter.
I did.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It might have been just because I thought you were Burl Ives.
I've been taken for a lot of people, actually. I have a composite face, I think. But I look like a whole lot of different people. But anyway. So
everyone I talk to about you likes you. So that makes me not trust you.
Fair enough.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's like always good to have one person out there that doesn't trust you. At least one.
I would like you and Jordan Peterson to have a conversation.
Oh, that would be just fine with me.
What do you think about him? Because he's in your sort of milieu.
Yeah, I don't want to venture an opinion on Jordan Peterson. I think he's a little too much on the macho side, and you know that this is what you need to do to pull your life together.
Yeah,
it's all interesting and therapeutic, and I think he's done a lot of good.
Okay,
lots of people who read him value what he said. I don't think it's got deep substance, but that's a bit of a guess.
Why were you here the last time? I don't remember. And why can't I remember?
I don't know why I was here the last time.
Dude, I've been doing this for 16 years. I can't remember who was on last week.
No, okay, that's why you can't remember.
No, but were you, was it Imago plugging
stuff? Oh, it was Imago plugging.
Oh, you know what? It probably had to do with...
Mike Jansen? No.
Mike's coming on in a few weeks, though.
Is he good?
We're going to have a whole special on head injuries, seriously, because Mike Jansen, Ellen Graf Martin from the publishing stuff and whatever, what's her name? Alana, I think is her name, who runs the Intricity thing.
Oh, yeah, Alana Carpenter.
Well, I'm going to ask her. She'll join us. She doesn't know this yet. And somebody else. Oh, the prison fellowship lady.
Oh, wow.
Like, what's with the head injuries?
Well, this happens.
Jeez.
They come in clusters.
You know who's on after you guys?
I don't.
Lila Bialy.
I've heard of her.
Yeah.
She's...
I heard of her because of you.
I know.
I know.
But is she coming here?
Yeah, she's going to be in suit. You guys are going to hug in the hallway. And Ben will be with her, too.
Oh, wonderful.
Maybe Josh.
You guys are lucky.
You have no idea.
You are lucky.
The only reason people spend any time with me is because there's a microphone.
Let me just say,
talking to
you are very fortunate to have this man, and you will be equally fortunate to have Lila and Ben and Josh if he shows up.
Okay. Can we stop now?
I'm sorry.
Well, at least we don't have to do his interview now.
That was John. We'll come back to him in a second. Jason Carter in the studio with us. JasonCarter.net. GrainsOfSand.tv, two websites you need to go to right now and creep on. Mm. What song are you going to do?
I feel
really strange. I'm sitting here below. I feel like you're a powerful person.
Yeah.
I'm 6'4", and normally I'm over people.
Mm.
And now I'm just worshiping at your feet, Jason Carter.
I'm used to that now these days.
I'm used to it.
I found my fame and fortune.
Yeah. Okay. What song are you going to do, man?
I'm going to play something for you which is a bit unusual. I've tuned the guitar a bit like an Arabic oud, and so I can get the quarter tones, and this piece is called Jis al-Wadi. It means bridge over the valley in Arabic.
Okay.
And so I play mostly on my own stuff, and this is one of them.
Beautiful. Live in the Drew Marshall Show, Mr. Jason Carter. ¶¶ Now I care. Wow, dude. Okay, I'm not sure how to recover from that. So that music, I would not listen to every day, but when you play it 2 feet from my face, it went right inside of me and grabbed something. Yes. So it reeks of pain and passion.
It's interesting because I've taken a back seat from music recently because of the film and other film projects, but something that I've actually needed to re-remember is how music can change atmospheres. And I do remember as I was on these crazy trips to North Korea and Afghanistan and Pakistan and other places with music, with my guitar to do projects, that was the focus. But I kind of lost that over the last few years. I forgot about that. And suddenly, in the last few months, I've started to remember that is the very thing. And so we sit in a little room like this, and the atmosphere that music can bring can actually affect people. And that's, for me, that's fundamentally the thing. That's what it is about, is that exchange. Now, I don't understand it. I'm not going to say that I understand what music means, but music is something amazing, and it can change an atmosphere. So if you take this now to North Korea, where there's a dictatorship and a really, you know, dark environment for people to have to survive in, and you bring something for a moment which is like that, which is positive, beautiful, creative, and you know, free, that only has an incredible impact in that moment. And in North Korea, it's limited. It's 5 minutes. But that 5 minutes of beauty and 5 minutes of gorgeousness can influence people forever. Now, when I was about 10 years old, a theatre company came to my school. I grew up in the countryside, you know, working class parents, and, you know, the most unartistic background you can imagine. My father was a dockyard worker, you know. They never had passports, never traveled.
Sorry, your father is a what?
A dockyard worker.
It's not what I heard. Okay.
Okay. So this theatre company came to my school, and they were loud, creative, and crazy. And I never forget, I don't remember what they did, but I never forget the impact it had on me as a person. Their personalities freaked me out at first. And then suddenly I realized there's a whole world of people out there. So I go to North Korea with my orange flares and my purple shirt and my long hair, as it was then. It's the same thing. They get to understand there's a whole world outside those walls that they've never heard of, never seen, and it will touch them. And I was ridiculed for going to North Korea by my colleagues, by family members, saying, you know, what are you going there for? First of all, is it dangerous? But secondly, you know, every dollar you spend goes into the government's pockets. You're supporting the government. And they were right. But those minutes, and I would say in total, an hour and 15 minutes of 12 days, I was free on stage with people in North Korea. And that's a miracle. That's phenomenal, because no one's allowed to address the public of North Koreans without guards, without this. And I was sitting there alone with my guitar, wasn't allowed to speak, but music can speak. And so it's interesting that you say that, because that's exactly what it's about. It's about those moments in a room. The whole album thing, you know, we do it because we need to make some money. I hate sitting in a room like this with my guitar with ugly engine. Sorry, no offense.
No, keep going, please.
You know, some greasy engineer with headphones on, like, do it again, you know. Where's the creativity in that? It's about people.
Yeah.
So it's about that communication with people. That's what it's about.
Okay, so just what I'm realizing is that anybody listening to this is probably having a hard time putting the labels on you. Oh, who is this guest? Wait, what does he do? Wait, is he a film? No, wait, he plays guitar. No, wait, he visits ethnic places. You know, how do you describe? I don't understand you, is what I'm saying.
He's raconteur.
Yeah, that's the thing I don't get. So are you, what's your, okay, so people say, hey, Drew, so what do you do? I work in broadcasting. Okay. Oh, okay, what do you, well, I have a radio show that I do. Okay, now we're complete.
Okay.
Help you complete me.
You're kind of a pilgrim, aren't you?
A pilgrim?
I don't know what I am, to be honest. I mean,
how do you put food on the table, man?
By playing the guitar before, but now I make films. So that's about it. So actually, nowadays, I say I'm a filmmaker, because that's what I'm doing, right?
Yeah.
But why is it we need this to label people? Why is the thing about this labeling thing?
It helps me sell you.
Okay, fair enough. I take that.
See, look, what was her name?
What's her name?
No, there's a recording artist who died young. You know, I've talked
you
about
loved her. Voice.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's her name?
No. A blonde lady, and she was very hard to pigeonhole till someone.
Yeah.
You know, the A&R guys were like, "Well, we want to sell you, but we don't know how to brand you."
Yeah. What's her name? She sang "Fields of Gold." And,
yes.
Yeah.
How do we know what we're talking about? And I don't even know you.
Yeah.
Dude, what's her name? Anyway,
connection of art.
Is that what it is?
Yeah. You both know the art.
What's her name? Emily. No, not Emily Harris.
I'm looking. Just keep talking.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Her.
Good talk. What's the did you not live in France or something like that?
Yeah, I have a place in France. Yeah.
I have a place in France.
Yeah.
Where is your place in France?
It's in a little village called Sauve, not far from Montpellier, Marseille area.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, yeah.
Eva Cassidy. Jeez. I'm at the point in life now where coming up with pronouns is like passing a kidney stone.
It's okay. I'm making up.
Kills
for
me.
Yeah.
What is that little town just out on the hills outside of Nice where Monet and the guys used to hang? Saint Paul de Vence. Is that what it's called? Saint Paul de Vence? Something de Vence.
Is it Salon de Provence?
Anyway, have you been there?
No.
No. Okay, good talk. What's your connection with all these cool guitar guys that most people don't know? Like, when I mention Alan Holdsworth to most people, they go, huh?
Yeah.
Like, he was the guy, was he not the guy that invented, like, the 8-fret stretch?
He invented lots of weird things that none of us understood, really.
And Joey Satz and Steve Morse. Mm. So a good friend of mine is a guy named Tommy Emmanuel, and Tommy's been in the studio here a few times.
Yeah.
So is that the kind of people you hang out with?
To be honest, as a solo guitar player, a classical guitar player, you don't really get to hang out with guitarists. But there are guitar festivals that I used to play at. I played with Tommy Emmanuel a few times at guitar festivals. Yeah. But that connection came through a very interesting recording project where a label in California did an album called Guitar Greats, and they phoned me up and said, "We want you to submit a track." I was like, "Wow!" So I submitted a track. It was a long time ago, maybe 15, 20, 17 years ago. And one of my tracks got on there. So that was the thing. That was the connection. And for me at the time, you know, when you're sort of, I was in my 30s, I guess, the association was really important. You know, it was really cool to have an association with these guys. And I've since met Steve Vai at guitar festivals and things like that. So you do meet these people. Yeah. Hanging out, I wouldn't say that.
No, no.
No.
Have you ever hung out at Green, what's that Christian fest in England?
Greenbelt.
You ever gone there?
Once, yeah. I went there once, yeah.
Oh, you didn't like it?
I liked it. Yeah, I liked it.
That was a silent.
Listen, any place where I can have a beer in each hand and be standing in front of Bruce Coburn, singing to a crowd of people that like may not really get the whole. I don't know. Okay. I just really enjoyed that thing.
Let me just explain. The Greenbelt until recently has been quite. If I may say this, be blunt. It's been quite a clique.
Yes.
And so the clique of Greenbelt has been very hard to penetrate.
Okay. So
So I would more have drifted towards the European side of things, as in mainland Europe, those connections.
Right.
And Greenbelt was always a bit of a mystery to me. Yes. And I was invited and uninvited, and then it became a bit tedious. You know?
Uninvited?
Well, I was sorry. Yeah, we forgot. You know. So, you know, that's how it went.
Just to help us understand the way that music came out of that guitar. So this is a classical guitar, normal 6 strings, but it's a very wide neck.
Mm-hmm.
Action probably is a little high.
Mm-hmm.
What I want to know is, how did you make it sound like it's over there?
Middle Eastern.
Yeah, that's it.
I tuned the G down to D, so here you have two Ds. So the G now is very slack.
Yep.
So the vibration possibilities are huge. So it enables me to really bend it to get the quarter notes.
Sounds like the bass stabilizes it, because if you left it all up there in the wiggly stuff, you'd get lost.
Exactly. So the harp guitar, which I usually have with me, has got extra bass strings, and then the bass on that is enormous. And so when I play this piece with that, the bass is almost like a drone, which is pushing it through.
Right.
Yeah.
I like it. Mm. Do you have other? I saw a picture of you with a really weird looking guitar.
Yeah,
the harp guitar, right?
This guitar, yeah.
Okay, I've seen this before. Do the Sultans of String have this?
Maybe,
or was it the?
That guy with the.
The thing.
That he played it.
That's helpful.
Oh, yeah. How did we ever get on radio? Good night.
Sitar guitar.
Yeah. Well, anyway,
would that be?
No! You know who it was? Harry Manx.
Harry Manx, okay.
Yep, he's a guy from Vancouver who plays, and he does have one of these.
Mm.
That would make it sound very...
Yeah, it gives this whole pedal bass note underneath that you can also play with a bow if you want. But yeah,
Can people get this? We can get this. This is Jason Carter. The CD is called Seeking the Divine.
Yeah.
And if you go to Jason Carter, what is it?
.net.
.net. JasonCarter.net. Mm-hmm. Of course, I'm sure you can go to the iTunes and get it. Can you?
Not yet. You can get it on Bandcamp.com or my website, but not iTunes yet.
Okay, good. What happened to your hair?
It fell off. I just chopped it off.
Me too.
Yeah.
Not quite to the extreme.
Yeah.
You're a very interesting fellow.
Thank you.
sitting beside me is the same guy who's playing this guitar in the background. We're thrilled to have some talent come into our show every once in a while. The talent that we can't explain, Jason Carter, is unexplainable. JasonCarter.net. Do you sing as well?
No. Are you in the shower?
You what?
Doesn't really count. In the shower.
In the shower. What was the thing that made you go all fingerstyle and classical and more traditionalist rather than folk pop, you know, Beatles like everyone in your neck of the woods wanted to become?
I think it was the sound of your fingernails on wood, basically. And my dad brought home a CD of Paco de Lucia. When I was about 13 or 14, I was playing classical guitar, also playing in a rock band, you know, doing all the heavy metal stuff. But then I heard the CD and I was just, I mean, it's like a life-changing moment, the whole about face. Put that down, pick this up and practice. And I think it's that, it's the atmosphere that can be created with a Spanish guitar, which is so unique because it has so much color. There's something about it. I don't know what it is. You're forced to collaborate with silence on a classical guitar.
Ooh, that's a great explanation.
You're forced to. Because a steel string guitar has a lot of resonance, has a lot of sustain, so you, in a way, you can hide behind it. Mm-hmm. A piano has the same, but a classical guitar, and a flamenco guitar especially, you're forced to collaborate with silence. And that's become one of the addictive qualities of playing guitar for me, especially in a performance setting, because it's the silence when the audience enters it personally, in my experience.
Do you have any guitar heroes?
Yeah, I mean, I've never been like that. But yes, John McLaughlin, I would say. John McLaughlin and Paco de Lucia were, when I was younger, were sort of heroes of mine. But I've never really idolized people like that, to be honest.
Tell me about the Prague Philharmonic Orchestra, because there's a guy from Prague. He wrote a book called Patience with God. He's a theologian and a philosopher, and he was the most soft-spoken guest I've ever had on my show, and his book has ruined me. Because it's an arduous read. Not because he's poorly written at all, but because there's so much on one page.
Mm.
Thomas Halleck is his name.
Okay.
So I've often wanted to get over there to visit Thomas, and while I'm there, I'd like to check out the Prague Philharmonic Orchestra. But I'm not going to go unless you tell me that they're worth it.
They're awesome. Yeah, they're one of the best. It's amazing to sit with. I played with a few orchestras. One was in Siberia, in Novosibirsk, with a harp guitar, which is quite unusual. It's actually a first. So I did the whole looping thing with harp guitar and orchestra. And the Prague Philharmonic, they're amazing. I mean, you know, no messing about, you know. And for someone who's an untrained classical musician, or an untrained musician, generally speaking, it could potentially be intimidating. But you sort of get through all that, and it's just about the music. And it was an amazing experience. I ended up conducting the Novosibirsk Philharmonic because the conductor got sick. So in one of the rehearsals, I'm conducting my own music that I've written. And these guys, you know, these are playing, you know, some of the best composers in the world at the time. And I'm holding this baton thinking to myself, oh, the Jason Carter of Plymouth Precision Engineering when I was 16 is now holding the baton for the Novosibirsk Philharmonic. And they're looking at me like, okay, lead us.
Mm.
Amazing.
That's whack.
Awesome. Scary.
So my daughter keeps telling me I should not try to say cool words.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
That's whack.
Spill the tea, sis.
But can I say something? Because it's just echoed something that's important, I think, to say to people is that, you know, I don't have an education in anything creative, and actually in anything at all. So I think it's really important that if you have a passion and you have a belief in something, I think we are made to be creative. And the way to do it for some people is to just step forward in it. To step forward and walk forward in that thing that you think you're believed to do, and I've developed my skills as I've gone. I'm earning a living now from film, and I'm learning as I go. So you have to have something which is tangibly usable, tangibly useful. And my films have good stories; they're filmed well. But I'm a beginner filmmaker, really. But I'm loving what I'm doing. You know,
I have a movie poster in my hand. What is? Why is your finger up?
I have a great expression.
But you don't have a microphone, so no one cares. Oh, Tim.
Follow the fear.
And that's it. Because it's scary.
Don't encourage him.
I got to make up for my ugliness.
I have a movie poster in my hand, grainofsand.tv. Grain of Sand, a film by Jason Carter, exploring cultural identity and intercultural dialogue in the Arabian Gulf through the music of the Bahraini Pearl Divers. Did I say that right?
Yeah.
Friday, this was last night. Grain of Sand is the soulful documentary the world needs right now. Nina Roth said that from the Huffington Post. That's a pretty big stinking endorsement.
It's awesome. Yeah, it's good. Yeah.
My voice went high, so it must be true. Official selection at the Dubai, what is it, International Film Festival?
Yeah, yeah.
UNESCO World Heritage Program. I can't say that last word.
Almaty, Kazakhstan, yeah.
Official selection of Vox Popular Media. There's a whole lot of symbols on Pakistan International Film Festival. Okay, this is obviously TIFF is next.
That would be awesome, wouldn't it? Yeah, I just got to get my head around entering my film to these other festivals, basically.
It's not. It's such a pain to do that.
Yeah.
I want to thank John Franklin for hosting this Imago. How do you describe Imago to people that are struggling with this conversation?
How do I describe Imago?
Yeah. How do you get people to get what you do?
Well, essentially, we exist to affirm artists of faith, both in their faith and in their artistry. That's what we're about. And the story of the beginnings of Imago, it's been around 45 years now, is that many Christians were, Christian artists, were marginalized by the church because of their art and marginalized by the culture because of their faith. So Imago exists to affirm both of those things.
That sounds like this show.
Yeah.
Well, it's, you know, and this kind of stuff still happens, you know. We don't like things that don't fit in neatly into our world. And we create our worlds, and then we want everything to fit neatly. And often artists break the boundaries, and which I think is great. That's creativity. That's imagination. That's God-given gift.
May I see this other poster, please?
You may.
John Franklin. It's a very interesting-looking chap on this hair, on this poster with lovely hair. Joyous. What is with you just bringing people on with nice hair?
Well, I didn't do that intentionally, Drew.
I think you and I have envy issues. Joyous, stunning, a riveting theatrical experience, says William Mootz from the Louisville Courier-Journal. Broadway actor Bruce Kuhn in Luke. Tell us about Luke. Sounds like a monologue of some sort.
It is. It's actually one of the Gospels.
Oh, I've heard.
Remember, there's Matthew and Mark and right. John, and then there's another one, Luke.
Luke.
That's the one. This guy does word for word, beginning to end.
Shut up.
The entire thing in a single performance.
Okay, a couple of questions. First of all, I don't know where my brain went on that. Well, I kind of went to, how does one memorize that much stuff? And then I went to, how does that stay interesting?
Actors have a certain capacity, certainly some actors, have a certain capacity to keep things interesting, as musicians have, to keep the music interesting. But they can keep the dialogue interesting. They can keep the words interesting. And one of the ways, I mean, you could ask that question if you're sitting at home reading this Luke book out of the Bible. How do you keep that interesting? Well, I think one way to keep it interesting is to perform it. Not the only way.
This is Thursday, October 25th at Knox Presbyterian Church on Spadina Avenue, 7:30 p.m., $10 at the door. Come on, you got to charge more than $10.
Well,
it's ridiculous.
I know it is, but we do that. May I say something further? You only have one poster in your hand. Because you have such a wide audience all over southern Ontario, it's going to be at Philpott Memorial on Sunday the 21st at 7 o'clock. And it's going to be at Lakeside Downtown Church in Guelph on Sunday evening. Did I say Sunday morning for that? It's Sunday evening for both of them on the 28th.
Okay.
So Sunday the 21st and Sunday the 28th.
Okay.
Philpott in Hamilton. And then Lakeside in Guelph for this rendering of the Gospel of Luke.
They're doing a good thing at that downtown Lakeside thing, Lakeside Church.
Yeah, they are.
I like what they're doing.
Very open to this kind of creativity.
Why?
Why what?
Why do you do this?
Why do I do it?
Yeah.
I think it's one of the ways for me to affirm our humanity as creatives. I think I do it also because, I'll whisper this, but I was trained in philosophy, so it's very heady stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we have overly conceptualized, made our faith overly heady, and we need to move away from that, not away in the sense of letting it go, but to bring our understandings into balance with our emotions. And I think art is one of the ways into that. You were going to see what brings tears. Years ago, people used to cry at concerts. And there's a 20th century artist, Mark Rothko, abstract artist, and they say hundreds and hundreds of people have cried before his paintings. There's something about drama and dance and visual art and music and film which moves the heart. Mm-hmm. And I think that's hugely important. So this is why I do it.
One of the last times I was reminded about exactly what you just said was I was at the Steve Bell concert at the Massey Hall. Mm-hmm. And he was there with the Winnipeg Symphony, I think?
Yeah, probably.
And he knew me well enough to know that if he didn't put me in the right seats, I would split halfway through.
So you were in the middle of the row at the front? Or
exactly. Exactly. I could not get out. And it was just, like, anything I did, I would just be awkward. So I just sat there. And I stayed for the whole stinking thing. I mean, it was lovely. It was great. It was fine. But at one moment, were you at that thing? At this thing? At one moment, he sets up this song and says, you know, I was at Auschwitz or whatever, and I was feeling the thing, and I got this idea for a song, and so I put this thing together, and he starts, and he hits those minor chords, hit those Eastern Bloc kind of just pull your soul down kind of music and grab you. And then stage right, here comes a lady pushing another lady in a wheelchair out on the front of the stage, to the front of the stage. And my instant reaction was, oh, come on, jeez. This is going to be so schmaltzy, you know, what's going to happen here? And next thing you know, they got a ribbon going, they're ribbon dancing and whatever, and I can't stand that stuff. It just drives me mental. I was a pastor at a church in Australia, and people wanted to do that. I said, fine, who am I to say that you can't do that? So just do it at the back of the church, please. It's just irritating. Next thing you know, I'm sobbing, like I'm leaking profusely, because the joy emanating out of this woman in the wheelchair's face, all she was doing was sitting in a wheelchair. The other lady had a ribbon going, and they were sort of dancing around and pushing the wheel. Like, I didn't get it cognitively, but my soul cracked. Mm-hmm. And then I was angry at Steve Bell for putting me in that seat.
There you are. This is what we need more of. Yeah. We do. We need more of that. Stuff that reaches the heart.
Mm. I prefer to be cold.
Yeah, well, your loss.
What are you doing next, Mr. Jason Carter of grainofsand.tv and jasoncarter.net?
I'm off to Washington, D.C. tomorrow to have a...
Please, I hope you're going to have an audience with Trump.
Yeah, we're going to go down to play the film at the American University via the Bahraini ambassador, and maybe Congress members and other people who are people of influence. I think that, you know, the arts, and, you know, this is why I love what John does, because it's about placing certain things into humanity. And the arts can, I don't believe the arts can change the world, but I believe that the arts can influence those who have the power to do so. And so...
Ooh, you're just leaking with good stuff today.
Yeah. But I believe that to be true for myself and my experience. So to have a platform to be able to, you know, show the film, but also talk about these themes that I think are important to an audience of influence is really, really important. So I'm going down to D.C. tomorrow, and I'll be there till Thursday, then back to Waterloo, you know, Kitchener.
Waterloo.
Here. Oh. Yeah, so I'll be here to show the film at Wilfrid Laurier University.
Wow.
On Friday lunchtime. And then I'm back to Bahrain on Saturday. It's a quick trip, really. I used to spend a month or so in Canada when I used to tour, but this is the kind of...
Well, now you got a woman to go home to.
Yeah, yeah. I got work to do. I got clients, you know.
Oh, sorry.
Plus, as well as that.
You're funny. I'm embarrassed that it's taken me this long to have discovered you. I really am. And I'm thrilled that you made the effort to come here. I know it was an effort. I know that your schedule is cray-cray. I should not.
You're so gangster.
I should not say.
Tell them we're going to hear tonight.
Where are you? What?
Briefly, tell them where we're going tonight.
Where are you going tonight?
Are you telling them?
No, you tell them.
We're going to the Aga Khan Museum, and in preparing for Jason to come,
Chaka Khan has a museum.
Yes,
Aga Khan. Yes,
Rocket Chaka Khan.
And the woman who is playing, she plays horn.
Oh, I've heard of this.
Yes,
Ahmed.
Ahmed.
British Bahrainian. So two nights in a row. Two musicians influenced by the early music of Bahrain.
The same songs, basically.
Same songs, halfway around the world, and here they are. Jason on Friday, and Yaz tonight.
That's some weird odds.
Isn't that weird?
I know.
I said, Yaz, you know, what are you doing in Toronto? So I'm meeting up tonight to understand why.
And you've not actually met her.
I've never met her before, yeah.
So he's going to meet her tonight. Mm.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Serendipitous, some may say.
Serendipitous, indeed. Yeah.
That's a lot of syllables.
Five.
Thank you. No, thank you, because you could have gone so many different ways. And the way you've gone, as an outsider, might seem like your shirt, flowery.
Mm-hmm.
But we all know it ain't been flowery.
No, it ain't.
No. Yeah, thanks, man.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
And, John, I just don't get you. No, because what I don't get is how come we don't – I think it's because we live far. Like, I would actually like to sup with you.
Well, then – Could we publicly set a time? Or no, yeah, then everyone will come.
Yeah,
no, okay.
Yeah,
no. After the show.
No, I seriously, the amount of people that say good stuff about you, it does worry me. But I thank you for the...
Why don't we meet and I'll try to show you a negative side.
Thank you. That's what I'm really trying to get.
Dark side.
Yes, the dark side. John Franklin, Executive Director of Imago Arts. If you give a rip about the stuff we've just been talking about, that's your center point. Imago, that's imago-arts.org. imago-arts.org. If you fell in love with Mike Jansen, Imago Arts had something to do with that. If you fell in love with our next guest, Lila Bialy, Imago Arts had something to do with that. And if you have any desire to continue following, I don't know, guys like Jason, I think that Imago is the one to blame for all of this stuff. JasonCarter.net. Thank you, boys, very, very much. My head is still spinning a little bit.